Hey, fellas, let's go ahead and start this meeting up. Ready?
Yeah.
All right, and let's start with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, man. My name is Mark Daly. I'm definitely an alcoholic. And we're going to try to talk about irritable, restless, and discontent. It's kind of funny, man. I don't live in that life anymore. You know, I get a little irritable every once in a while. And I get a little restless every once in a while. But I haven't been discontent in a long ass time, man. I got a great life, man. I have started coming here in 2003 regularly. I try not to miss this deal, man. It has changed my life. And I don't know, man. You know, what's the point of being irritable, restless, or discontent? That's what I really want to know. I got a friend of mine that's running around here someplace. His name is Happy Jim. And when I first met him, his name was Angry Jim. And he was a real angry guy, man. And he really thought it was cool to be angry. And I asked him, I'm like, you know, how are you going to stay sober if you're mad all the time, you know? And I asked him that because somebody asked me that about 5 or 6 years before that. And they said that I would not be able to stay sober if I didn't find some happiness in being sober. And I heard that for some reason. I don't know why I heard it. Maybe it was the sarcasm in his voice when he was telling me that. But I thought that maybe there was something to that. You know what I mean? If I was going to walk around angry all the time, because I was pretty mad. I did not want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I certainly didn't want to get this fucking sober. I just didn't. I just wanted a couple nights sleep. But anyway, I wound up coming here. I wound up getting hooked up with a bunch of really good guys. And it was just silly stuff like that, you know, like, you know, if you don't find some happiness in being sober, you're not going to be able to stay sober. And it hit me. It was like, man, you know, what am I going to do? Because I was a pretty angry guy. And so I tried to figure out how to find some happiness, man, and I found it, believe it or not, I found it just by being useful and trying to help the next man. That's where I found all the happiness. That's where I found all the joy in my life. So, I don't know, man. I've been coming around for a minute. I've been sober since May 30th, 2003. That's a really long time. I never saw that coming. You know, I find myself going to meetings and I'm the old guy in the room, you know. It's kind of weird. It feels strange. But, you know, the only thing I know for sure is old Tennessee was right, man. If I'm not going to find some happiness in my sobriety, I'm not going to stay sober. So, if you've been walking around here for a long time with a chip on your shoulder, it's a good place to just knock one off right over here. You know, just get rid of that shit and just let it go and, you know, get happy and be happy. Live a happy, contented life. I don't know. So I'm going to pass this thing. I'm going to pass this magic ball. This thing is magic. I don't know if you guys knew that or not, but if you talk into it, you can get on the radio.
Thanks, Mark. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be sober. And just by the grace of God, My last drink was May 9th of 1999. So here in about 6 weeks, I'd have 25 years of sobriety, just a day at a time. And it's been a slow process for me, you know? I tell people a lot that I ain't right. And that's why I'm here, you know, because I'm not right. I'm not as wrong as I used to be quite as often. And I don't stay there as long. I've gotten some tools, you know, but sobriety is a journey. And I will say that, you know, some of you might know Brian Kondo. We go to meetings together, and Brian told me that I guess I had checked the box for service work here, and somehow I guess he was involved with some of the planning, and said I would be given he said I was going to be given a speech on anger. He said, "You don't know anything about that, do you?" I'm like, "Hell no, you know, I don't know anything about that." I'll just give you a little bit of background. I came to AA in 97 on April Fool's Day. What a coincidence that is. I was not exactly a happy camper. I was married. I had two kids at the time, young kids, 2 and 3 years old, something like that, girls. My marriage wasn't working out the way that I thought it should. My wife had her agenda, and I had mine. And mine was mostly just work, and then get off of work and drink and do drugs. She stayed at home and gave the kids a bath. Not that I never did anything like that, but, you know, my thing was to leave work and to go to a bar, to go to what I call the stop and shop. And she thought that everybody else was a bad influence on me. And what she didn't understand was that I was the bad influence on everybody else. They probably would have just been sitting around watching a Braves game, but I had to show up and go, "Hey, you know where I can get some of this?" Or, "Hey, look what I brought over, a bottle of booze," or whatever it was. I tell people I have two speeds, on and off. And that's pretty much in everything I do. I'm not quite like that as much anymore, but I run to extremes. And for some of you might know, Brian is in the electrical trade. And I tell people I'm not actually an electrician. I just play one on TV, and I stayed in the Holiday Inn Express last night. But I have been known to go what I call phase to ground. And if you've ever seen what that looks like, sparks fly. And that's really how I think I ended up here. I woke up on April Fool's Day, 1997. And in front of my two daughters, who were, like I said, really young, I threatened to kill their mother. I've got a voice. I don't need this at all. I mean, I can talk, you know what I mean? Like that, right? And I went berserk. I went on a soliloquy about what everything was wrong and how it was all her fault. And I threatened her. And I even said, "I hope you're getting all this on tape." And she was. So there was a restraining order. And she thought that I needed to go to Arizona to check into a recovery, a place, right? And I said, "I'll go anywhere you want me to go, but I ain't going to Arizona." And they couldn't really send me to Arizona because they hadn't done an intake. Nobody had done an evaluation on me. So, but the judge did agree that maybe I needed to go someplace. So they gave me a list of local therapeutic facilities. And I chose the most convenient one, and a guy named OBO in New York City, or New York, upstate New York, he picked up the phone, and I'll try to keep it short, but that guy ended up being my sponsor, and I went through his outpatient treatment program, and, you know, that guy was my sponsor for 18 years, and I ended up, I did get sober, but, and I actually got back together with my wife, you know, after the restraining order. In fact, we couldn't even complete the restraining order. We're like a couple of magnets, you know, it's like a chemical imbalance, it's like trying to stop a freight train. And we were already back together before the restraining order was up, but I didn't change really. I was just finding out that maybe there was something different about me as far as the way I drank. You know, I didn't drink like other people. I surrounded myself with people who drank like I did. So after about a year and a half of kind of messing around in AA and talking to OB and pretending to, you know, try to get some recovery, she filed for divorce. And that was like somebody pulled the rug out from under my life. She filed, and within a short period of that, you know, my kids would come over and visit, and they would tell me that basically my best friend was helping set up the Christmas tree and this sort of thing. That didn't really help my anger problem very much. I tell people a lot of times the best thing I did the first year was I didn't drink and I didn't do anything stupid, you know. I thought about a lot of stupid shit to do, but I didn't do it. And I started reading the material, praying to whatever God I thought there was, and I asked God to remove the obsession for alcohol, and he did. But then I realized after I got through a four-step that alcohol wasn't my problem anyway. My problem is me. And I remember being maybe probably 5 or 6 years sober. And I read something in the 12 and 12 that said that humility is the foundation principle of each of AA's 12 steps. And I said, well, how is that? Well, how are you going to be humble and tell the truth, you know? I got to be humble to tell the truth, to admit who I am. AA was the first time I looked in the mirror. I was busy taking her inventory, your inventory. I never looked at my own part in things. And for all I know, I couldn't figure out where I had a part in things, you know? It was all about everybody was doing, somebody mentioned it earlier in one of the sessions, you know, everybody was doing stuff to me, and that was making me angry. And things weren't going the way I wanted them to go. And about that same time, you know, restless, you know, I couldn't be at peace. I always had to be going somewhere, doing something. Even in sobriety, you know, it was like, what was the next thing I was going to do? I couldn't just spend a day at home, you know, cutting grass or cleaning house, by myself especially. And I remember that from when I was still drinking. I remember one time being on Lake Lanier with some friends, and we were all drinking. And then I had to leave for a couple of days. Somebody was graduating college. And I said, well, I'll be back in a couple of days. When I came back, they were all gone. But I drug a boat back up there with me. And I'm like, what the hell am I going to do on the lake by myself for a full day? You know, I had no skills like how to deal with life. I felt like I always had to have somebody or something around. Just a lot of anxiety. So about the same time, you know, 5 or 6 years in, I started realizing that I needed to learn just how to be. Just be in whatever situation I was in, and not try to, you know, find some kind of peace outside of myself. Not think about things that happened in the past, not think about things that were, you know, might happen. And once I'd done a fear inventory, you know, when I first did my fear inventory, it's like I didn't really have any fear. I didn't think I had any fears. And a couple of years into sobriety, I had brain surgeon. I'm a brain surgeon. I had been working in Russia, and they put this girl in a car with me. And she was about 23, and I was 35. And I thought, well, there's a reason that I got divorced. You know, I'm going to trade in on a light model. Well, long story short, we ended up getting married. And we're sitting in Walmart at the checkout counter. And we're right there at the National Enquirer and the gum and all that and the belts right there. And this lady, my wife and I are standing there. It's my second wife. This lady just walks in front of us like we're not there. And in my mind, I'd already cut this lady up into 1,000 pieces, you know, but I wasn't going to say anything. I wouldn't say anything to her. There's no way. I'm what Obi would say is passive aggressive. I'll sit there and take it and take it and take it and take it, and then I blow up. My wife, who was about 115 pounds soaking wet, she just taps the lady on the shoulder and she says, "Excuse me, ma'am. We were standing here to check out, just waiting on the lady who's paying, and you just stepped in front of us. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you." See, that never would have occurred to me. Actually, it might have occurred to me, but I had a fear behind it. And the fear was that if that lady said, "Well, man, and then boo-boo," you know, or whatever, you know, well, so what? Then we're going to have a problem because I'm going to go from passive to aggressive. And I've struggled with that throughout my sobriety, you know. I have. I'll just be honest. I don't think I'm ever going to be right. I'm much better at, since I got sober, at being able to be at rest where I am. But there's still anxiety. I don't know when it started exactly. I hit a truck with a motorcycle in 92, December 18th of 92. And I think for me that something happened right there, because that's when it seemed like my life just started. I started going down this path of being irritable, being angry. I read the definition of irritable for camp here, and basically it's easily excited to anger, you know. And I was thinking about it. A lot of times I'm irritated because I think everybody else ought to follow the rules, but I have no control over that, you know. I'm driving. I get. It's all based in fear. A lot of things. I had no idea that I was scared of things. If I'm in traffic and somebody cuts me off, the reason I get angry is because I'm scared, because that person scared me. I've been on a motorcycle in a left turn lane, you know, what I call a suicide lane, and I'm about to make a left turn and somebody whips out of someplace and they're coming right at me, and I got a passenger on the back, and I want to just choke the living, you know what, out of somebody. Wake up, you know. The problem is that sometimes I'm that guy who makes a mistake, you know. And when I first came to AA, I actually, in college, I had a thing. It was a can of Glade air freshener, and I had taken masking tape, and I drew a skull and crossbones on it, and then I wrote "instant death" because I thought I ought to be able to spray people and just get rid of them because they were that stupid. Then I come to AI and I find out that my best thinking got me here. That's how smart I am. And in fact, a lot of times, if I pick up a chip, and Kondo and I it's not really an argument about this, but there's a part in 12 and 12 where it says it's by circumstance rather than virtue that we're driven to AA and have acquired the rudiments of faith, basically, right? It's not any virtue on my part that I'm here. I'm here because I don't know how to live life. And I'm a slow learner. I was the last guy to find out that Santa Claus wasn't real, you know? I want to live in a fantasy world. But I would encourage anybody that has problems with being restless, irritable, easily angered. You know, I tried the whole thing with counting to 10. The problem is I have a switch, and it's that phase to ground switch. And once, and I don't know what triggers it. You know, I've been on antidepressants in sobriety. I've tried this, I've tried that. The best thing I've found to calm me down and to keep me at ease and to make me less irritable is my higher power. You know, if I start my day with God and I admit to Him that I'm an alcoholic and I turn my will over to Him in the morning and I say, God, whatever it is you got for me, you know, whatever it is you need me to do, just give me a clear vision of that. And of course, sometimes I have to check that with somebody because I'm one of these guys that might decide that God told me to do something that maybe He didn't really tell me to do. If I'll start my day with God, then my day goes a lot better and I'm much more at rest. I'm much less irritable. Not that I'm always irritable, you know. It's just I have these episodes, if you want to call it that. Discontent. I'm discontent with myself. I'm probably my own worst critic, you know. And that wasn't that way before I came to AA. Now I feel like I never live up to, you know, I always want to measure my progress against somebody else. And I can look at somebody that's got, you know, 3 months. I can get something out of somebody that has 3 months. I can get somebody out of somebody that has 50 years. It could be good, it could be bad. I can say, you know, I tell people a lot of times, I'm not completely worthless. I could be used as a bad example. If you catch me on the wrong day, at the wrong time, you know, I make mistakes in sobriety. The bottom line is, taking a drink, all bets are off. I have no chance for anything. And I guess I'll leave you with this. So, mother of my children, divorce was final about 8 weeks after I got sober, late June of 99. She ended up marrying my best friend. I married this girl in Russia I'd met after 5 or 6 years. Both of us got divorced. I divorced first, then she divorced. Within a heartbeat, we were back together. It's a chemical thing, you know. It's that old Thomas Dolby song, "She Blinded Me with Science." It's pheromones, right? So we got back together. We didn't get remarried. And by the way, I had a son. We had a son together 6 months before the divorce, or 6 months before she filed. So I had three children with her, 2 daughters and a son. So about 5-6 years into sobriety, we're both divorced. We get back together. We try to put it together for a year and a half. She don't like me any better sober than she did drunk. And the other part was she never had a part in any of it. So about 2013, she married someone else. Shortly after they get married, things fall apart. She goes to a girl that was roofing a building, like her office building. The girl said she'd been on a roof since she was 5 years old with her dad. My children's mother starts explaining to this girl about her third failed marriage. And the girl says, "You need to read a book." And the book was Al-Anon. It was an Al-Anon book. And about 6 months ago, my wife, the children, my mother, and I, for some reason, after seeing other people and all this, you know, after all these years, nearly 25 years, we're back together. We're not living in the same house. We're not living in the same house. Our children are grown. And she asked me about 6 months ago, she said, "What happened to the angry man?" She said that book changed her life, by the way, because she realized that she had alcoholism too. And I gave that to her. But she asked me, you know, "Where's the angry man?" I said, "I put him through a macerator. I had a funeral pyre, threw his ass in there, put him in a in an urn and shot his ass into space. But I did tell, I warned her. I said, look, he could come back to Earth anytime. You know, he could come back to Earth anytime. I've got a sponsor now who's telling me that the main thing I need to remember is that I don't behave that way around her anymore. And so far I've been really good at that, you know. And I'm focused a lot more on God and what the gift that God's given me. So that's kind of my thing about restless, irritable, and discontent. I would just encourage you to let it go, because I've wasted a lot of time, even in sobriety, trying to control things that are beyond my control and fearing things that never come true, you know, things that never happen, living in the future, thinking about the past. You know, that stuff will get you angry. All I can do is the best I can do today. So that's all I got. I guess we're supposed to open it up and toss it around. You got something you want to say? Here you go.
We're supposed to throw it.
Thank you. Yeah, my name's Damon. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Damon.
I think you just outed Santa Claus's anonymity, but I don't know. I was on vacation and Thanksgiving, and I was reading The Spirituality of Imperfection by Kurtz. I don't know if anybody else has read it. And I realized that you can't have imperfection if you don't have some definition of perfection. And then I realized, well, wait a minute. How do I know what the definition of perfection is? You know? How do I know it's a perfect definition of perfection? And how do I get restless, irritable, and discontented if I don't have some sort of an idea of perfection? It's all kind of rooted in that. And I came up with this idea came in, it's called perfectionlessness. And the idea is, it really taps into tradition too, which is, not everyone in here has a different kind of definition of perfection, but collectively something emerges from the group conscience. And I call it that, instead of looking for perfection, I think what it is just to get a consensus of improvement. I've been married for 44 years, and by the way, I've learned that winning arguments is way overrated, you know? But it is this something that emerges when we start sharing together, that it's better than either one of us would have chosen. So I just want to throw that idea about perfectionlessness. I think the only perfect definition of perfection is you are perfectly you at this moment. You know, and this moment is perfectly this moment. There's never been a moment more perfectly this moment. And that's the only one I know of. And so all I can really do is, in any group of people, is just find a consensus of improvement. Because if I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, I haven't ever had it in my life where there wasn't some sort of standard I was trying to hold myself up to or somebody else around me.
I really want to make a difference in my life and in God's life and also in another person's life if I ever wanted to sponsor somebody. And I don't want to leave them astray or leave them the wrong path. So I'm really getting educated in this and learning how to live this life all the way through, clean and sober, spiritually and subconscious too. But I know I have a lot of character defects in my life, resentment against a lot of people. But today I don't really try to hold them against myself or anybody what they say to me. I just want to, you know, stay within the boundaries of the 12 steps, you know, and I don't know if it's a lot of humility that I have to go through again to get where I need to be, or it all depends on the alignment or what it means. Whatever God is trying to tell me, I just want to hear something from somebody else if they're going through something similar to that, because to me, I felt that I was doing what I was supposed to do, because everything he gave me, I've been following the guidelines. The most important thing that I missed out on is going to my home group, where I used to go every day when I first started going to that program, and now I wind up going every Saturday. But I have to stay in contact with my sponsor and then we talk a lot about where I'm at and what I'm doing. And talk to a lot of guys that's in the fellowship. And I'm still asking God, what am I doing wrong? So let me know. Because I don't want to go back the same way I just came back in.
I'm Jordan. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I definitely, gravitated towards this particular topic. It's funny that the happiest I ever am is when I'm not thinking if I'm happy or not. The happiest I ever am is when I'm not paying attention. So that really threw me off there. I think in my life, and similar to the gentleman in front of me said, that a lot of my discontent and restlessness is when I compare my experience to what I think it's supposed to be all the time. I mean, I went on a guys hiking trip, right? And I'm standing at the top of this mountain in Glacier National Park, like looking at a glacier. And all that's going through my mind is like, why am I not enjoying this as much as I think I should be? That's how my mind works all the time. It just kind of proves to me over and over that drugs and alcohol are not actually my problem. Like, they're not. Like, my mind, the way I think, nothing's ever enough. When I'm looking to those things in my life to give me something they aren't intended to give me, I'm running into constant problems. When I get all that I need from my higher power and sponsoring and sponsorship, then I don't need to look for that stuff anymore. And it's definitely been a big reminder, lately. The first, years of my sobriety, I was so involved, tons of fellowship events and service commitments and sponsoring a bunch of guys and all the different things, treatment center meetings, and then I had a baby, and then 14 months later I had another baby, and now it's interesting because I have way less freedom to physically participate, and now that I have that less time to do that, I realize that I was leaning on that so much more to keep me busy as opposed to actually seeking a connection with God, connection with my higher power, like that being the source, and that's something I'm trying to transition back to instead of like my solution being service commitments and meetings, which it's not. It needs to be my dependence on God. And through any kind of transition, I can get, a little annoyed and short and all the stuff. I just get these unrealistic expectations of life. No matter how much money I make, it's not quite enough. If I ever ask myself, do I make enough money? I have just these crazy ideas like, my wife should probably, as soon as I walk in the door, just drop to her knees and give me a blowjob every day, which, maybe the first few months, but not 7 years later. I just have these crazy ideas, that I compare my experience to, and I realize like, where the hell did I get these ideas from? I just make this shit up, totally make this shit up. There's no basis behind it. It just keeps reminding me that in and of myself, I do not have what it takes to live life successfully. Whatever that is, being a good father, being a good husband, being a good employer, like whatever it is, if I'm relying on my own mind and my thinking and my power, I'm going to fuck it up. It's only a matter of time. It's definitely a good reminder of what my real solution is, that this deal is a plan for living. I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I'm reminded of the daily reflection today, and it says, we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity has returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will recoil from it as a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. And I went with the daily reflection read, and I went to page. Oh, Ken, I didn't know. Yeah, I had no idea. Sorry about that. Is that better?
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that. So yeah, I went farther than what the daily reflection read, and I actually went into the big and read into page 84 and part of 85 on the big book. You know, it talks about that insanity, and around 10th step, it's saying something about sanity returns. You know, that means that I'm probably a little less irritable and discontent. I'm a little less restless. I'm a little more, I guess, sane. I really don't know what that's like exactly, because I don't know that I've ever been sane in my life. But y'all are teaching me a little bit each day. So I do appreciate that. But you know, just hearing what the topic is, you know, relating that back to the daily reflection. I try my best each day to start with the daily reflection. You know, I talk to my sponsor daily, and I've got two sponsors. I got a service sponsor and a step sponsor, and I talk to both of them on a daily basis. Both of them know that they're my sponsor. You know, and I think that's important too. You know, having a sponsor and having them know that they're your sponsor. You know, realizing that, you know, I'm not just going out there, going to a meeting saying, hey, I got a sponsor, I'm ready to sponsor somebody. And, you know, not having anybody that I talk to or that I'm held accountable to. I honestly work the steps to the best of my ability each and every day. I recognize things as best I possibly can. And I'm willing to listen to what my sponsors have to say. If my sponsor says, hey, you know what, I think you're acting a little irrational or a little insanely there, I listen to what they have to say. You know, I've gone out of my way to do something, to go out of their way to help me. So I actually respect what they have to say, and I listen to what they have to say. Through that, today, I have a wife who wants to continue being married to me today. I have kids that want to recognize that I'm their father, you know. And all that comes because of Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps of the program. None of that would be what it is today. I know what my life was like long before Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was anything but sane or happy or content. And because of what y'all have taught me, because of the fact that y'all kept saying, keep coming back at a time where everybody else said, get the hell away from me. It gave me a place and taught me how to live life, and it continues to teach me that today. So that's all I got. Thank you.
Bob Carson, recovered alcoholic. And I tell you, I've been sober a long time, and you think after a while, you figure, why can't you just be an asshole during the day? I'm not drinking anymore. And why do people have to be bugging me? And I learned that I have to suffer from a disease that might eventually kill me if I don't take care of it on a regular basis. I wake up every morning dealing with untreated alcoholism every day, and then I have to treat it. It's like a diabetic has to treat their stuff. So I've been sober almost 39 years, and I've been an asshole probably most of that time. Not really. I've been irritable, discontented. I'm pretty happy with my life right now. I got a really good job. I got a pay raise twice this year already. I have a nice cars, truck. My house is being paid off. If you look at all the tangibles, I'm pretty happy. And next year I get to retire, if I choose to do so. That's what I plan on doing. But daily things, in the book it talks about, I am unable to maintain effective relationships with other people. And that's where irritability comes into play with my life. Not contentness with who I am and where I'm at in life or how sober I am, what I'm doing in AA, because I know how to stay sober. I have a home group. I got sponsees. I have commitments. I do the deal. But walking outside of an AA meeting and going down the street is where I have the most trouble. At work is the biggest issue. Because you know what? Like you said, I'd love to be right. My instinct initiate in any statement, any conversation, anything, is I'm right, you're wrong. Automatically. It's instinctive. I've learned a very valuable lesson. Keep your freaking mouth shut. You know, because over the years, I used a weapon called sarcasm. It's a really effective tool. It'll cut people to ribbons in a knife fight. I don't need a big, heavy hammer. You know, I used to have really bad anger problems, like severe, like you had. You know, rageaholic takes about 4 seconds. I remember I was working at a 7-Eleven years ago, so 12 years sober, and I got pissed off and threw a milk crate down the whole length of the store. That's what an alcoholic does when they're sober without treated any of the behaviors, that 6 and 7 step. So what I learned is some valuable lessons. So we can talk about the problem later long. We're probably, people right now are probably irritated me talking right now. Right? But what do we do about it? Well, I can throw the ball to somebody else. Or I learned a valuable lesson. The 10 step, it doesn't work for me at nighttime. I can't wait till 11 o'clock at night to talk about my 10 step. I have to do a spot check on a daily basis. Whether I call somebody, my sponsor, or somebody. The home group is the most important, valuable lesson I've ever had with dealing with this crap. You know, because they'll know you. They'll know what's going on in your life if you stick close to them and talk to them about stuff. But I've learned a valuable lesson. I can actually take a look at myself now and say, you get a little upset, Bob. People will let you know around you what you're. If people start walking away from you when you're talking to them, there's a clear sign that you're getting upset, right? My tone of voice, my bosses, I've had the same boss for 24 years. I work in the medical field. Not always easy to deal with people, other people in the medical field, especially my patients. I've learned to keep my tone moderate. I've learned to shut down the sarcasm a little time. You know why? I'm sick and tired of being an asshole. Right? So when you have behavior, if you're irritable, discontented, whatever, and you're still sober and you know how to stay sober, when you get sick and tired of those behaviors, you'll change them. That's what I've learned. You'll change those things because I want to be happy. I want to be content. I want to go to bed at night with a clear conscience. And most of the time I do that. Very seldom do I go to bed knowing I screwed up and have to make an amends to somebody the next day. Usually I've taken care of it right away. You know, right now I'm in a unique situation. I have a coworker who's out for 6 weeks on leave. She has some surgery, and the person filling in for her, it's challenging, to say the least, because she's not nearly as competent as the girl she's replacing right now, and I have to really watch my freaking mouth around her. She made a mistake the other day. We have to do consent forms every patient. We had done the consent form last week, but she wanted us to redo the consent form because she couldn't find it in the computer. Okay, I printed it out for her and showed her where it was at. Politely. Left it alone. That's all I got to do. So I'm here for the long haul. I don't ever want to drink again, but I also want to be serene and happy along the way, too. You know, that's the whole bottom line. I want the full package deal of recovery because I can stay sober as long as I want to. Just fucking watch me. But I'd rather say, just watch me. If you want to know how you're dealing with life, go to your home group and sit there for a while and see if anybody asks you how you're doing. If you just sit there, don't say nothing for like a half hour and see who asks you how you're doing. You'll know if you're a really good member of a home group by that time. Who wants to talk now? I'm tired.
So, I'm an alcoholic.
Sure.
I'm going to say something contrarian. I'm 57 years old. I didn't pick up the drink till I was 49. However, I am convinced that it was destined to happen. I feel that I probably lived my life with all of the character defects and the self-centeredness of an alcoholic. I can remember at a very young age having to write down, where do you see yourself in 5 years? But my head didn't understand that that's a goal. It turned it into an expectation at a very, very young age. I'm talking 14, 15 here. And I ran with that idea for all of my life. That anything that I thought should happen was expected to happen, and it had to be the world according to Suma. And of course, it never, if ever, worked out that way. So I was always disappointed, always discontent, found myself in positions of, you know, always going for that next job, that next promotion. And that job or that promotion that seemed like the bee's knees a year ago, as soon as I got it, it wasn't good enough. And then that started to translate into everything else. The house is not good enough. Car is not good enough. My clothes are not good enough. My wife is not good enough. And I ran my whole life on not good enough till I'd pretty much driven everything out of it. I got exactly what I worked for. And then I turned to the one thing that was always good enough. That was the cup. And that's where I was for the last 8 years. In that cup, because it was the only thing that ever felt good.
Oliver, alcoholic. I was thinking about the restless, irritable discontent, and I think that kind of came in phases for me. Like at different parts of my recovery, there was a different main contender for my attention. Like immediately sober, it was definitely discontent. You know, but like I worked the steps and get involved, and then it wasn't really discontent anymore. It was like restlessness, right? What to do. And then like you stay sober, you keep doing the stuff that got you not to be discontent anymore. And then you're headed in a direction and your life gets busy. So now it's not restless. I'm not really discontent and I'm not really restless. And I would have told you I'm not very irritable. I'm just quickly angered. Wasn't that the definition? Quickly driven. Now, I wouldn't characterize myself as irritable, but oh yeah, I'm quickly excited to anger. No doubt about that, right? And it's like, why is that? And when I look at my life and what causes that, it's not really the big things. It's not really the big things. Like I got a text message today when I was here from a doctor for like an unpaid bill that was supposed to be covered by insurance that I've still got a call about that's like $700 that the insurance was supposed to pay. But I didn't really like sweat that so bad. I was like, it'll get covered or okay. I kind of can instantly recognize that that's out of my hands. Like I only have so much sway over an insurance company and their reimbursement rates. Like I realize that's not Oliver's forte, but you know, let's see, what time I'm able to get something done, and if or if not, you've inconvenienced me to the point of not being able to get that thing done when I wanted to, even though the timeline I chose was arbitrary and really has no effect on anything else other than my artificial peace of mind I created by imposing a deadline that didn't have to exist, right? And I don't know why I do that, but it's like I'll subconsciously like dangle these carrots in front of myself for like little dopamine hits. Well, if you do that by 9 a.m., you'll feel good. You will have done it by the time you wanted to do it by, on your own terms and on your own. And then if you get this done like this or that, and it's just, but it's not like I really consciously plan it out like, oh, yeah, your happiness is tied to, you know, her unloading the dishwasher that night or whatever, you know, it's not, but it's just kind of like I don't see it, but I kind of subconsciously plan it. And then here's the fun part is that I have subconscious expectations of everyone else. And what's cool about that is I never communicate them to you. I just hold you to that standard like you're supposed to be a member of like the Psychic Friends Network and know what you're supposed to do. Like, you know, it's and it's just, it's so petty and it comes up with the small things. And I guess over time, my ability to see my pettiness and how just insanely trivial and like taskmaster-ish I can be, and like slave driving or what, just all these horrible, pointless, controlling things that don't really affect any outcome other than, I guess, me proving to myself I'm in control of my life, maybe, I guess is what I'm trying to prove by You know, I can move a pile of shit from over here. I can move it over there. You know, watch me do it. And then you interrupt me doing it, and I freak out. And it was just a pile of shit. It didn't matter. I can see that I can see the pointlessness of it more and more, and I do try and improve. And, you know, the simple prayer I've been using is just, God, help. You know the defect I'm talking about. And someone taught me a prayer. It's kind of a good one to remind me of just how sick and twisted I am is, God, help me want what I have. And it's like, ouch. If you have to say that one, it's like, it's kind of like I'm admitting that I'm an ungrateful piece of shit right off the bat. And I am, like, I get something, and for a moment I'm grateful. And then, like, 2 weeks later, it's like I did it all on my own. No one helped. It's mine. I've always had it. And I don't plan to, like, have that perspective on things. It just kind of happens. I kind of arrive at it. And I have to stay grounded. Like, that's where my mind will take me unless I'm, really doing this thing. And for me, the ultimate safeguard for me against getting overwhelmed with all this irritability in my life is to work with the new guys, to take the phone calls. I'm never more spiritually connected than after reading the big book with someone else for an hour and I'm leaving and riding home. And you know, I know obviously that I can't do that all the time every day, but when I'm doing that and the more I'm involved in that, the less I tend to get involved in those little petty things to drive myself crazy with. Anyway, that's all I got.
My name is Josh. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here, alive and sober. Thanks for your shares, guys, and what's shared around the room. It's like a couple things that have been crossing through, like running through my mind. I like what you said, Damon, like with the perfectionlessness. Like, it's actually, I think, a blessing. Like, this whole idea of like fear being this thing. This old-timer that I know always talks about how fear is actually not a curse or anything bad. It's a blessing because it shows me how far away I am from God, right? And it's like this whole restless, irritable, and discontented thing can actually be a blessing because that means that I've experienced peace, right? I know I have a barometer now for where my life is, right? And I can take action, the same actions that were taught to me in the big book. And even then, sometimes, I mean, there's been seasons where I'm doing all the things, but that ick is still on me, right? And it makes me think about the third step to some extent where it's like, I try and fight that stuff to the, like, with all my might, right? And has anybody ever chopped wood before? Like, when I think about the third step, like, the third step in general, like, some of these things, it makes me think about chopping wood. And it's like the first time I ever tried to chop wood, I picked up that axe. I'm a pretty big guy. I'm going to swing this axe as hard as I can and just chop this wood in half with brute force, right? And what happens? Well, I swing as hard as I can. I miss my mark. The axe doesn't do its work. I'm burning up energy foolishly. And then someone comes over and taps me on the shoulder and they go, "No, Josh, this is how you swing the axe. You pick it up, you put it in motion, you let the weight of the axe head do its job. Guess what? It chops correctly, it does its job, I hit my mark, and I don't burn up energy foolishly." And it's like, I try and fight these things, even though I'm doing all the things, and if I could just pull back and surrender to the fact that I'm a human, I'm a spiritual being having a really human experience, and life is going to change, circumstances are going to happen, as long as I keep seeking during that process, right? And keep doing the things, going to meetings, sponsoring guys, reading the book, praying, like, this too shall pass. There's been seasons in that. And there's like a couple different experiences that I've had where it's like, I don't know about you guys, but like, when I'm available and I have the time or make the time, the more meetings I'm in, the less chance I have of being restless, irritable, and discontent. Is that just me or am I crazy? No? Okay. I remember being in Hawaii, like in one of the most beautiful places on earth, and normally I'd have a car on these trips, and we didn't have a car, so I was like, okay, we've been here a week. I'm getting to a meeting in Hawaii before we leave. And I remember we were there 8 days. I mean, it's just gorgeous, right? And I was like, all right, I'm going to this noon meeting, this little side beach off the side of the road. And I sat down in this circle with a bunch with people I don't know, but know, right? Language of the heart. And I sat there, and I didn't even realize how restless, irritable, and discontented I was until I sat down in that circle, and it was like I was gasping for air. And it's like, man, when I'm close to you guys, I have a lot less chance of being restless, irritable, and discontented. I feel more connected to my wife. I picked up 7 years last Sunday, and it was really cool. It was a really experience for me. My wife is not an alcoholic. Not. We had a lot of stuff going on that day. We tried to squeeze in a 2 p.m. meeting. She wanted to come with me to support me. And I could feel that same restlessness, irritability, and discontentment on her. And we went to that meeting. I picked up my chip. We got into my car. She sat down next to me, and she took a big, deep breath and goes, oh, I feel better. And that was an awesome experience, right? The more I'm with you guys, God is in you guys. God is in those rooms. The more peace that I feel more often. And life doesn't always create that, but I know when I'm closer to you guys, I'm sponsoring guys, I'm a better communicator, I'm a better listener, and I have a better chance of not being restless, irritable, and discontented. So that's just my 2 cents on that. I'm just grateful to be here. Thank you guys again.
My name is Phil, and I'm an alcoholic.
Bill.
And thanks for that last share there. I found a lot to identify with. And, I was trying to think about how I experienced, being restless, irritable, and discontent in this current life that I'm living. And I don't remember the last time I lost my temper. It was probably 30 years ago. I've been around, and I've been sober for 40 years. And I just recently celebrated an anniversary. So I've actually been looking back at my life before and after, since I've been AA. And I go to meetings every day. I have sponsored people. And of course, and I lost my wife last year after 49 years. And this is nothing I haven't heard somebody else go through and live. And I find enjoyment in life today. I have certain things that I think about. But I guess the discontent was the one thing I could say I could probably have some identification with at this point, more so than anything else. And the reason I would be discontent is because I'm a self-centered alcoholic, full of fear. And it's not necessarily conscious fear. I've understood for a long time, a lot of my fears are subconscious, if you will. They're not in my thoughts, but they're part of me. So what I came to when I was thinking about sharing was that I think tomorrow there's a session on 10, 11, and 12 in the steps area. And the reason I don't have the irritability and the fears and all these other things consciously today is because that's where I live as best as I can. I'm not saying I do anything perfect. More often than not, most of my discussion meetings I attend are somewhere along the line, was saying we're living life on life's terms, right? And that's what I learned to do. I learned to live with the things that I don't particularly care for. But I've also learned to embrace this way of life. And it has given me great freedom. It's given me a lot of benefits over the last 40 years, where everything, a lot of the things I acquired or I lived through today. And, the biggest joy is when yesterday on the way over here, I stopped and visited my 18-year-old granddaughter in at her college dorm and took her out to dinner and then got to know her a little better as an adult, even though, of course, I've known her since she was born. And these are the things that I cherish today. I cherish life today. I don't know how long I'll be around. All I know is I'm not worried about it. All I know is I have to take care of today. And like I said, 10 and 11 and 12 are the answers. And a fellow here asked me, am I doing anything in my home group today? I've had service positions since almost day one. And I say that helps a lot because it gets me out of myself. And the last thing I wanted to say was that, you know, everything I heard there says, hey, if I'm having these problems, I'm disturbed. And what's the answer to disturbance? You know, there's something wrong with me, so I need to address it. And I can do that today because another thing I embrace is that, you know, my sobriety is contingent upon my spiritual condition today. All I have is today. And I live that way, and I've been living that way for quite some time now. And all I can say is it works. And when I started hearing these things early on, you all gave me help, hope, rather. You gave me help as well. All I can say is, you know, just stick around. If you're feeling these things and you're having problems, talk about them. Talk about it with your sponsor. Talk about them with the person after. This whole discussions here, this whole time here reminds me of just like the time before and after meetings where we talk and we get to know each other better than the formal session of being at an AA meeting. So I don't know if that helps anybody else, but it felt like something I had to get off my chest. So thanks for letting me share.
I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Dave.
You know, it took me a while to understand that I'm responsible for my happiness. It doesn't come from outside, because that doesn't last. You know, I get the new car, and then the kids eat McDonald's in the car, and then they get ketchup, and then it's like crap. You know, it always goes to crap. And God's not responsible for my happiness. But His will for me is to be happy and peaceful. And so now it becomes my willingness to let go of any thoughts or preconceived ideas or my prejudices that keep me miserable. Challenge it. Why do I have to be unhappy because my wife didn't do something my way, the way I expect her to do it? If I can just let that go and let her do it her way, I can be happy again. It really comes down to just paying attention, and when I'm not happy and I'm not peaceful, how willing am I to let that thought go? Because it's just a thought. I've just embraced it, but I can just as easily let it go if I'm willing to. And we don't think we can do that, but we can, because I know, because I've done it. And you know, I've been, in this last couple of years, I am now caring for my mother-in-law and my mother. My mother-in-law is 94 years old. She weighs 60 pounds. She has Alzheimer's. She's totally contracted. And I can walk in that room and say, "Hey, Patty." And her eyes open up. And I embrace her. And I lean down. And I give her a hug. And I kiss her. This guy didn't do those kinds of things. He wouldn't have even gone. A year ago, my mother had a nervous breakdown at 89 years old. We had to put her in a mental hospital for shock therapy because she lost her mind. Thank God I'm in a position that I could go spend 3 months with her. When we left the hospital, the psychiatrist said, "I hope you're ready for this because she's never going to be better." And as we're walking down the hallway, this lady taps me on the shoulder and she goes, "Can I talk to you?" She goes, "Have you signed all the release papers?" And I said, "Yes." She goes, "I was your mother's psychiatrist when she was off. I can help her. Would you bring her to my office tomorrow?" They adjusted her medications, and within 6 weeks, I had my mother back. That's God. Mm-hmm. That's a miracle. I just was in the right place doing the right thing at the right time, and that's what happened. And now she lives with me today. And you know what? There's times that my perceptions get so screwed up that I let my blessings turn into burdens. I get all backwards. That's such a blessing to have my mom there with me, you know? She's the one that bailed me out of jail. She's the one that changed all my shitty diapers. She's the one that got me out of everything. And I'm having a problem taking care of her? I think not. You know, when that gets to be a problem, it's my perception's all wrong. And I got to get straight, you know? But yeah, this outside world crap making me happy, it's going to fail me every time. God's will for me is to be happy. And that's all I have to do is then be happy. Be peaceful, you know? Be the things that I want to be. I didn't think I could do that. But I've tried it. It works. I don't do it perfectly by any means. But, it's just little things now. And I'm just like, that's just the ego kicking in saying I can't do this. And I laugh at it.
And that's, it just lets it go. So
I know it won't break. I'm David. I'm an alcoholic. It's like I'm closer to a fishbowl than I have been in many, many decades. So for me, there's the category of, so number one, expectations, my expectations of the people, other people, and my expectations of myself, both are completely out of whack. You know, I expect a lot from me. I probably expect more from other people. I heard this great saying, somebody's like, I expect, for everybody else, I expect justice, and for myself, I expect mercy. I was like, that's good. I beat myself up on one hand, you know, I can kick my own ass, and then, you know, nobody else could meet my expectations, yet I want mercy, right? It's just this insanity that, you know, that I didn't ask for, right? There's a category of thoughts, like somebody said, you know, what happens in between my ears is for entertainment purposes only, and I thought that was all the wacky stuff, those wacky ideas that I had, and what I've come to realize, it's pretty much everything. Because I don't ask for a lot of the thoughts that pop in my head, like I could do better than my wife, or and then when I'm in a good spot, like I can look at those thoughts and go, "You're an absolute moron." No, you're absolutely lucky. I mean, like the fact that she's with you is just like A, you're a recovering alcoholic. Like every man in this auditorium should be thanking their lucky stars. There's a woman on this earth that put up with the shit that we got to deal with in between our heads. But that reality just gets lost on me, right? Like the fact that I should be thankful, like the fact that I should be thankful that I'm freaking alive, right? That I've got these high quality problems, but those things just slip away from me, right? I can't hold on to that stuff. So that's kind of the crux of this thing. I've got this disease that's like, it's not enough. The expectations are too high, whatever. And when I can have moments of clarity, I guess, where I go, that's bullshit, or that's bullshit, or that's insane. Why would you think that? And I can poke fun at myself. It's really helpful. But then the other ones are where I'm like, oh, that's why I have justifiable anger. You're talking about your mother being elderly. I'm going through that with my mom, and she's a lot younger. I'm like, why am I angry right now with the situation? I'm like, because I'm scared. Because I'm reaching a point with her and she's showing signs of, we had to move her to a place. That's frightening, you know, because that means something. Doesn't mean she's going away tomorrow, but that does mean that that's closer to happening than it was before. And that reality has hit me in the face. And so it's like, it's natural to feel fear. And that leads to anger, right? So I'm like, oh, that's what that is. But what the program gives me is the ability to go, again, it's like the fourth step going through that with, and the fifth step going through that with my sponsor was, all right, I can point to everybody else and say, all these people did me wrong, whatever. And he's like, well, what was your part in it? Right? Oh, what's my responsibility? You talk about your, you know, your ex, and, you know, My ex-wife, I'm remarried to somebody different, and it's wonderful. I sing a song in a band by Kenny Chesney and Grace Potter called "You and Tequila." "You and Tequila Make Me Crazy" is like the female and the tequila. I'm like, it's problem one and problem, you know, 1A and 1B, right? And what was my role in that? My role was, well, I selected her. I chose her. And then when I got sober and started dating after 2 years and started like meeting people like my ex, going, wow, she's pushing all the right buttons, and call my sponsor. And he's like, so how does that make you feel? I'm like, yeah, something about my picker is broken and I need help. And all of these things is a process that, you know, we go through where it's just, again, peeling the onion about, good Lord, what is the problem this week? Right? What's the crisis this week? Thank God we've got this framework and a program and people who can kind of help us, you know, kind of guide us through this discovery of what's making us tick, and the serenity prayer that's like, well, this isn't my problem, but this is something I can control, right? This is something I can do because I'm not a victim. The world's not just happening to me all the time. I'm making choices. I'm putting things in action. And then things are coming back to me in reaction, right? So what's my role and how do I make better decisions next time? Or how do I not be an asshole to my mother, right? Or how do I not be an ungrateful husband who should be, you know? It's like, thank God women are not visual creatures, you know? So anyway, just random thoughts very late, but it's, you know, I suffer with the same affliction everybody else has talked about, you know, and it's just the level of expectations and the, you know, self-justifiable anger and all that stuff. And I'm happy for people that don't have to deal with that anymore, but I don't know, maybe I need more meetings, but it just seems like I'm wired that way. And maybe just accepting that and finding a way to release the pressure, like let myself off the hook a little bit, let everybody else off the hook a little bit, is probably the right path for me anyway. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, man. So it's been a good meeting. You know, you say that. You know what, man? I just had some really good guys in my corner. They told me a long time ago, man. So I shouldn't be here today, right? I should be in a cage somewhere or dead. So they told me a long time ago, man, you got nothing coming. So and when I heard that, I was like, what the hell does that even mean? But you know what, man? I got nothing coming. I got nothing coming. With that idea, you know, I'm not going to get upset about some shit that I don't have any control over. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to go through life irritable, restless, or discontented. I'm not going to try to do it. You know, I'm not going to try to run the show. I'm not going to play God anymore. You know what I mean? All that shit never did work for me. So with all the things that I'm not going to do, there's some joy that comes along with that. And it is, you know, happiness and peace. And whatever happens, it just happens. That's the way it is. Well, you know, somebody said in an A&A meeting a long time ago, everything is just the way it's supposed to be in God's world today. If that's true, you know, what do I got to complain about? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking nothing, man. So, anyway, I hope you guys had a good meeting. It was good for me, and I'm glad you guys, glad you came, glad you participated.
Keep us sober if we ask. God, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you, God. I keep coming back.